Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia.
And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found, but
don't you know we're going to have a Solartopia? Yes, indeed. We are here in Solartopia with the great Gary Knoll at the Gary Knoll Network here, progressiveradionetwork.com. I'm Harvey Wasserman. We're here for the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. We have Gary Knoll, the man, right on with us today to start off the show. We're going to talk about Vermont Yankee and Indian Point with a few people who are completely involved and committed, and will have a lot of information for us. But Gary and I were fortunate enough and honored enough to be at the rally yesterday up in Buchanan at Indian Point, a couple hundred people, marchers going from Oyster Creek to Indian Point and beyond. Gary, tell us all about it.
First and foremost, I commend everyone who took the time to be there. It's never about who doesn't show up at anything in life. It's about who does. The empowered minority always influences major social change. At the height of the civil rights movement, the feminist movement, the human rights movement, the organic movement, the anti-war movement to get us out of Vietnam, for example, under 1% of the population were actively involved in protest, and yet it was enough to move the disempowered majority to realize it was time to close that chapter, learn its lessons, and move on. So when I see a lot of people from all walks of life coming together at Indian Point, right across the street from Indian Point, and with all the speakers and the performers and the Japanese survivors of Fukushima, how did that happen? It happened because we didn't rely upon the major environmental groups. Had we relied upon them, we would have found that it would not have been an event. The major groups have sold us out.
Well, it would have been a grant-writing proposal.
That's correct. When we find out that the Friends of the Earth and some of these others are making millions, even hundreds of millions of dollars a year, and then they're no longer against clear forest cutting, they're not against dumping by the military, the number one polluter in America, they're not against drilling in the oceans or the Gulf, they're not against nuclear, they're not against what is called clean coal, which is an oxymoron. They're not against removal of mountaintops in Appalachia. Then you have to say, well, what exactly are you against, and where did you decide to change your mind? And then you start seeing the big bucks coming in, and then the foundations, and this is true of so many foundations, Harvey, they only exist to raise money to maintain their own standard of living and their own offices. And then lo and behold, all those people who don't have a dime, who work as volunteers, who spend hour after hour, in addition to being mothers and fathers and driving kids to soccer games, they get on the phone and they put together this rally. So kudos to them, because the environmental movement is now going through a rebirth. But this
time, we're
seeing its grassroots. We're seeing that the people who are telling us about genetic engineering of food and leading the marches in Washington around the country, who are stopping gas hydrofracking and challenging nuclear power, these are the concerned citizens who become citizen activists. It's like this is 1965 all over again. So I'm very optimistic, and I'm also optimistic that based upon a different way of doing it. Yesterday, one of the top people at WBAI, where my program is heard and has been, I've been on Pacifica 34 years every day, he said, oh, you did it all wrong. I said, okay, how did we do it all wrong? No, you should have everyone lay down in the street and block the entrance. And I said, okay, the networks were there, media were there, so we would have had picked people being put in cuffs or herded off and jailed. What do you think the media would have covered then? What would have been the take-home message? radical activists lay siege to nuclear power. I said, we chose a different approach. We chose more of an approach to educate. Hence, the media, we're learning that nuclear is not safe. It's not clean. It is certainly not green. It is not sustainable. And how we've been lied to by the Nuclear Regulatory Agency acting as a mouthpiece for the nuclear industry. I said, so that message was the message we wanted to give. And in unity, we gave that message. So ask yourself, which one would have educated people to join together to be anti-nuke? Watching demonstrators get arrested in front of there, or having a peaceful protest with films, literature, dance, song, information, and interviews? I said, this is not 1976. We have a different mindset. And by the way, last week I met with the station manager of WBAI and showed him the latest ratings. In the last 4 months, BAI has lost 75% of its entire audience. That's the largest drop in the history of media, in the history of radio. In all my years in radio, I've never seen it drop. And the station manager says, why? I said, well, look at your programming. Look at how radical that programming is. Look how it isolates. And look at how you have a victimization mindset. So you say, if you're a victim, come join us. And I say, I believe the future is not saying I'm a victim, who's going to join me, but rather we have solutions for sustainability.
Right.
Come join us. And that's where the energy is.
Well, that's why we call this the Solartopia Show, because green power and wellness, we have, we're looking at I don't call them alternatives anymore. I think we're the mainstream now. And, all the chemical stuff. The old nuclear and fossil fuels in energy, the surgery, chemo, and radiation and cancer, that's the alternative. And what we are now is the mainstream. Gary, you and I were at this rally against Indian Point. I'm about to put out a piece. I believe the Vermont Yankee plant will be shut within the next couple of weeks. It's a huge deal. We have 104 reactors in this country, old reactors we're trying to shut down. If we get the state of Vermont to shut this one, it's going to be a very big deal. I think Indian Point will be next. Got a lot of good energy fighting Indian Point, stopping it. I know you've been working against it for decades. And, you come down the Hudson River on the train, as I do fairly frequently, and you see this god-awful blight on the river, and what do you think? How soon do you think we're going to get Indian Point shut? And what is the key? We have Susan Shapiro on the line; she's going to join us, and Phil Musigas from Riverkeeper will join us soon. But what's your take? How do we shut Indian Point?
We shut Indian Point when we open mines.
There you go. That's good.
All right. Right now, we have to open the minds of the media and Governor Cuomo. I believe that Cuomo is looking for grassroots support so he can then have the political will to say, after careful examination, we do not need Indian Point. We have alternative energy sources. The Japanese have gone down 98% in their nuclear facilities.
That's right. 54 reactors in Japan,
two
are operating.
Only
it's amazing.
Two. And now, look at them. They did not fall apart, and they didn't lose their energy requirements. I said, we in New York City, we can take a lesson from them. And I say, let us put our message to the governor. Letters, phone calls of a positive nature, not condemnation, but rather ask him to be an ally for truth.
Well, of course, Mario, his father, was presiding over the shutdown of the Shoreham plant, as I recall.
That's correct.
We had a $7 billion nuclear plant built on Long Island, and suddenly after it was finished, people discovered, well, maybe we can't really evacuate after all. And unfortunately, Wilco, Long Island Lighting Company, which died a much-deserved and belated death, insisted on making it radioactive with a so-called test, and then it sat there. Now it's sat there ever since, slightly radioactive. Whereas if they hadn't done that, we might have been able to use it for a big handball court or something. So, but the citizen action united grassroots forces shut Shoreham, and now we can do it in Indian Point.
And all we have to do is ask ourselves, how would we like to be spoken to? Kindly, with passion, but in a conciliatory manner, or harsh and demeaning? And unfortunately, historically, some people within the movement have used a sledgehammer when a feather would have done a better
right.
job.
Well, it's so like nuclear power is a chainsaw to cut butter. So
we need to approach the governor and our legislators, and over again to the legislators in New York State and in Vermont, let's let them know we support them in their support of the governor. because at the end of the day, the governor can only close nuclear power plant if they have an immediate threat of a risk of health to the community. They cannot do it unilaterally. They have to get the permission of the Nuclear Regulatory Agency. But they had the political will to do so. No governor can just shut a plant.
Let's talk about that for a minute, because this is really relevant right now and what's happening in Vermont. We have Philip Musigas and Susan Shapiro on the line. They will join us when we get to Indian Point. But while I've got Gary Null here, I want to explain what's going on at the Vermont Yankee, because this is a major monument in the history of the world, actually. The Entergy, which bought Indian Point, owns the two reactors at Indian Point, also came into Vermont around 2003, I believe it was, and bought the Vermont Yankee plant. And when they bought the Vermont Yankee plant, they signed a deal saying, okay, if the state decides that we should not have a certificate of need to continue operating as of March 22nd, 2012, which is coming up, we will shut. So the legislature got together, and there's a public service board up there, and they got together, and they said, no, we don't want Vermont Yankee to continue to operate. You can't have your certificate of need, although that's not official until March 22nd, which is the anniversary of the opening of the plant. And we don't want you to have the certificate of need. We know that's going to happen now. And Entergy went to court and said, no, we want you don't have the right to keep us from continuing to operate this plant. It's a federal purview. It's the Nuclear Regulatory Commission only that can say whether or not we can continue to operate, even though we, Entergy, signed this deal with the state of Vermont to get the plant in the first place. Well, now, and there was a federal decision which said that the legislature cannot decide to shut the plant. Okay, but it's really for the Public Service Board to make the decision. And they had a hearing Friday, Entergy, and it was described as not a good day for Entergy in front of the Public Service Board. Now, the current governor of Vermont, Shumlin, was elected basically to shut Vermont Yankee. The grassroots movement in Vermont Yankee is very, very powerful. It's been helped by the fact that a cooling tower just fell down at Vermont Yankee. There have been tritium leaks from pipes that Entergy said did not exist. And then, after this lawsuit, which Entergy won, they sued the state of Vermont for $4 million in legal fees. I mean, this is not exactly a good PR move. Now they're looking at, and they just discovered in the judge's decision, which they viewed as a favorable decision, Entergy did, they discovered that the judge left the door open for the Public Service Board to deny Entergy the right to create more radioactive waste at the Vermont Yankee site. So come March 22nd, less than 2 weeks away, we will see the Public Service Board, I'm predicting this, and I'm pretty sure it's going to happen, the Public Service Board will say, no, we're not giving you a certificate of need to continue to operate. We're not giving you a permit to continue to generate radioactive waste. And they will order the plant. They will just say, hey, and that should shut the plant. Now, what Entergy will do is they'll take their, you know, their squadron of lawyers, and they'll go up through the court system. It will go to the U.S. Supreme Court. The Supreme Court will have to decide, even this Roberts, conservative Roberts Court, will have to face the idea, A, of states' rights. Does a state have any right whatsoever to deal with a nuclear plant within their boundaries? And generally the answer has been no. But this is, secondly, a question of contract law. Is a contract that Entergy signed with the state of Vermont binding? Or can they just turn around arbitrarily and say, no, well, we didn't mean what we must have been on drugs at the time, and we didn't mean what we said, and yes, we're going to continue to operate whether you give us this Public Service Board approval or not, even though that's what we agreed to. If we win in court, and this, they have never been weaker. Entergy has a really weak case now. I mean, we're going to say we were crazy when we signed this deal. We didn't mean it. The contract is no good between us and the state of Vermont, even though we signed it. They have a really weak case. Of course, the courts being what they are, we'll see. It will go to the U.S. Supreme Court. If Vermont wins and if this reactor is shut, it's going to be the first time a state has come in there and said no, and it's gone down. If Vermont Yankee goes down, the pressure on Indian Point is going to be gargantuan.
And Diablo Canyon in California, which sits on an earthquake fault.
Right, and San Onofre, the two reactors at San Onofre on another earthquake fault between L.A. and San Diego, those are shut now. They may not reopen. We have Pilgrim in Massachusetts, which is looking for a new license. There are state permits they need. Now, Philip and Susan can update us.
Okay. I'm going to have to split because I thank you very much.
Thank you, brother.
And I
always an honor to have you.
I look forward to our next demonstrations out there.
Yes.
All right.
I love how you were giving a speech and you said, and Harvey Wasker, oh, there he is. And he came around. I love that. That was really a fun moment. Gary, thank you for the show. Thank you for the network. Thank you for all you do. And thank you for lunch.
Have a good program.
You too, brother. Okay, so we're going to continue. Gary Nall has been instrumental in fighting Indian Point. I believe we're going to win. I believe it's going to happen soon. We are joined by Philip Musigas from the Riverkeeper Organization and Susan Shapiro from IPSEC, Indian Point Safe Energy Coalition. Can you say hi, Philip?
How you doing, Harvey?
Good, Philip. You sound like you're in a wind tunnel. That's fine. Susan?
I apologize. I'm in the car.
Well, I hope you're not driving.
I am, but I have Bluetooth, so I'm not touching the phone and not looking at the phone.
Well, I have a fake tooth, so you and I are kind of joined at the hip there. And Susan Shapiro, are you with us?
Yeah, hi, Harvey.
Okay, you sound more civilized. You're on a landline, obviously.
Yeah. It's nice.
And you're with IPSEC?
I'm with IPSEC, and I'm on the board of Clearwater.
Okay, and IPSEC is the Indian Point Safe Energy Coalition, and Clearwater, of course, is the great boat that goes up and down the Hudson for clean water. I just had lunch yesterday with the incredibly magnificent Pete Seeger, who was, of course, an instrumental force at the home of Connie Hogarth, two of our great activists. And so I'm a lucky guy, and I'm lucky to have you on. So, Susan, let's start with you. The key issue at Indian Point, the way that the state of New York could actually shut Indian Point, as I understand it, is a water discharge permit. Can you tell us about that? And, Philip, jump in when you think it's appropriate.
Yes, unlike Vermont Yankee, where it was a legislative act, the state in New York has the state DEC, Department of Environmental Conservation, has an obligation to uphold the Clean Water Act, which is a federal law under the EPA. And what they have done is they have already denied Entergy a discharge permit due to violations for over 30 years now.
When was this denial issued?
This was issued about a year. Philip couldn't give us the exact dates, but it's about a year and a half ago, and it has actually been appealed and went all the way up to the Supreme Court because they claim that cost could not be, that was too expensive to install this closed cycle cooling, which is state of the industry and is used at many and energy plants, not just nuclear plants, already in the country.
So the U.S. Supreme Court or the state of New York Supreme Court?
The U.S. Supreme Court.
And what did they say?
They said costs may be considered, but not if the intent of the law is not upheld. So it went back, and the New York State DEC denied the permit in a very well-reasoned denial, and where they did actually consider costs. Because what Entergy has said is, well, we want to use a system called wedge wire screens, which basically all it does is stop some of the fish and some of the eggs from going through the plant, but it does nothing for the thermal pollution, which is the major part of their violation, as well, and also the fish kills, which is, well, their system would only address that. And right now we know the Atlantic sturgeon that breed in the Hudson River right in the Havistraw Bay, which is right at Indian Point, basically, are an endangered species. They've just been listed as an endangered species. So it doesn't resolve that issue. And the third issue it doesn't resolve is that they are leaking radioactive waste, billions of gallons of radioactive strontium, cesium, and tritium into the Hudson. And they acknowledge this.
Uh-huh. So, Philip, your Riverkeeper is a party to this lawsuit, I assume.
We are Riverkeeper intervened in the state permit proceeding that Susan referred to. I just want to make one clarification to what Susan said. She's absolutely right. This question of whether or not power plants have to build cooling towers to comply with the Clean Water Act.
Well, this is an issue, real quickly, this is also an issue at Oyster Creek in New Jersey, and we'll come back to that, but go ahead.
It is, and it actually forced the owners of Oyster Creek to cut a deal and to shut the plant down early. So, but the issue at Indian Point is essentially what Susan said. The Indian Point specific case actually has not gone to the Supreme Court, but the national regulation from EPA that is implicated in the case went to the Supreme Court. So just a minor clarification there. But, I think the state is in a very strong position by denying this water quality certification. And there is a key fact that the public needs to understand, and that is that under the Clean Water Act, which actually has, in this case, has authority over the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, if Entergy can't get this water quality certification denial reversed, so the state reversed it, the state denied this permit in 2010 in April, and if Entergy can't get that turned around, the NRC cannot issue them a license renewal. So this is a point where the state law and the state permit and the federal license renewal really overlap, and it's a trump card that the state holds. And it's a different situation than Vermont. We're in a stronger position here.
Well, yes, but you're talking about a license renewal as opposed to a shutdown. Susan, what is the mechanics for first of all, both of you, if the state has denied Indian Point a water permit, why are they still operating?
Good question. That's a good question. That their claim is, well, it's in the legal system. There hasn't been a final determination, which isn't true because there has been a final determination. They've appealed it. So they're claiming that. There are other reasons it should be shut down immediately besides that they're not in compliance with the water quality permit. They're also not in compliance with their design basis for fire safety. And it's been acknowledged now that they've requested at least 30 exemptions because their plant is not operating properly, it's not built correctly, and they were denied those. And so instead of the NRC saying you must shut down until you fix it, which any building department would do if you were in a building violation, you couldn't occupy the building if you weren't in compliance with your C of O. But because they're the NRC, they say, no, you can keep operating, and you will have people walking around the plant to see if there's any fires in wires, basically, that no one could see because they're in walls and in piping. So it's very risky how they're operating the plant right now. That's one area they're not in compliance. There are many others. But the NRC has this ability to continue to allow them to operate no matter what the condition is at the plant.
Well, this is Philip, do you want to comment on that, the legalities?
Yeah. Sure. I mean, I think the Susan raises a great point about this fire safety issue, and this is a classic example of how the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is a completely captive agency. They're completely subservient to the nuclear industry and to Entergy. They did rule that they denied these exemptions fire regulations, but they're going to allow Entergy probably years to come back into compliance. And if they were an actual enforcer, and if they actually had the interests of the public in mind, they would close the plant down at a minimum until they got those requirements back online. And,
all right, well.
A great example. I'll give you one example of this fire safety that we're talking about. We found out after Fukushima that Indian Point's nuclear waste storage buildings, where these spent fuel pools are that are filled with nuclear waste, they have no fire extinguishing system in those buildings. And when we asked them why that was, they said, well, there's no combustible material in these buildings. The spent fuel is underwater, so it's not going to catch on fire.
However, to jump in, so to clarify that, if there is a earthquake, Indian Point happens to sit on two earthquake faults, and those spent fuel rods touch each other, they will combust. They're so densely packed. And they will actually start a fire and evaporate the water that's in there. And the answer that they have given over and over again, how will they deal with it? They're going to take garden hose and hose the thing down. Now, we saw at Fukushima, they attempted that, and it obviously didn't work. So they don't really have a plan on how to handle evaporation of that water, whether it be from an earthquake or some other situation of a fire being caused in those buildings. They have no way to – they have no plan, let's put it that way,
right,
on how they're going to handle it.
And we saw how well the fire hose worked at Fukushima.
Right.
Just for the just for reference, at least one – of the spent fuel pools of Fukushima Unit 4 does still appear to be, shall we say, problematic.
Right.
And, of course, the genius of the Mark I design at Fukushima and elsewhere is that the spent fuel pool is 100 feet in the air.
Right. Now, the Indian Point doesn't have that problem, but we do have the problem that they know the spent fuel pools are leaking, but they've exempted them from inspecting where it's leaking because of the way it was built. It's too hard to inspect.
Yeah, well, you know, so as they say at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, whatever. So how the question becomes, how do we shut these guys down? Okay, we know that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is a completely out of control rogue agency. It's been called a rogue agency by many, many people. It is part and parcel of the nuclear power industry. We currently have a chairman, Philip Jasko, who occasionally raises his voice, actually questioned the continued licensing of or relicensing of reactors in the wake of Fukushima, where none of the major recommendations have really been implemented.
Right.
None of the lessons learned at Fukushima have become part of the liturgy of regulation, and yet they continue to rubber stamp these reactor license extensions. But the question is, how do we win? We see a potential clear path to victory at Vermont Yankee. There's a potential path to victory, actually, at Pilgrim in Massachusetts, where they are reliant on a state permit to get a relicense. But here at Indian Point, and by the way, the license is set to expire at Pilgrim. This is not, you know, sometime in the future. Indian Point is looking to extend a license that doesn't expire for a while. Is that correct?
No, it expires in 2013. There are two plants that are operating, and one's in 2013 and one's in 2015.
Okay, so if they don't get relicensing, they'll be shut next year and then 3 years from now.
Right, exactly. Now, like, our lever, as we said, was this discharge permit on a state level, and what we really need to do is give the governor support, and we would like people who are listening or people who care to try to get resolutions passed in their towns, community groups, PTAs, churches, and get emergency responders, firehouses, businesses to sign on to this resolution, because the governor does need you know, coverage.
All right, where is the resolution online? Where can people get the resolution through the Internet?
There will be, it will be posted at clearwater.org, and I think Riverkeeper will probably have one.
Well, you're not doing all the same one?
Yeah, it is going to be the same one. We're going to share the same. But
when will it be ready?
Philip, maybe by the end of this week, but definitely by the end of this week.
Is there anything people can sign right now that will allow them to take action?
Riverkeeper has a petition, right?
We have a. If you go to riverkeeper.org, we have a number of actions against the NRC and against Indian Point. If you go to our Take Action page on our website.
All right, we are at the Green Power and Wellness Show, the Solartopia and Green Power and Wellness Show with Harvey Wasserman. We're talking with Susan Shapiro of the Indian Point Safe Energy Coalition and Philip Musigas of Riverkeeper. We're talking about shutting Indian Point, and we are at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888, if you want to call in about shutting nuclear power in general and Indian Point in particular. We're glad to hear from you. I want to point out, as Gary Null did at the top of the hour, there are 54 licensed reactors in Japan, and all but two of them are shut. I'll repeat that, 54 reactors, two operating. Japan has not gone dark, and, you know, they are not going to be building new nuclear plants. I personally believe that there will be no new nuclear plants built in the United States that will open. Let's put it that way. We've got four more or less under construction in Georgia and South Carolina. I don't believe those will ever be finished. I'm doing a piece on it now, which I'll post tonight or tomorrow at nukefree.org and here at the progressiveradionetwork.com. We're going to take a short break. We're with Philip Musigas and Susan Shapiro. Call us at 888-874-4888.
New plants, oil refineries, pipelines, mega dams. Iran, Iraq, Russia, Nigeria, Venezuela, Kurdistan. Oil spill, meltdown, flooding, suburbia, mudslide, traffic jam. Road rage, asthma, famine, leukemia. It's time to get a better plan. Sweet home to me, Solartopia, that's the future for me.
All right, that's the great Dana Lyons of Cows with Guns fame singing the Rocky Top version of Solartopia. We're here at the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. I'm Harvey Wasserman. We're talking about Indian Point and nuclear power, how to get the Indian Point nuclear plant shut. Real quick, we've been talking with Susan Shapiro of the Indian Point Safe Energy Coalition and Philip Musagas of Riverkeeper. We have a call from Patricia on Long Island. You were at the rally Sunday, Patricia?
Yes, I was.
Well, what? Tell us about it.
Well, I think it was a phenomenal gathering of people, people from all over, people of all different ages, people with all different dynamics that they came for. We all had the same purpose, and it felt, with the energy gathered together, that there was a possibility of great hope. It was a sacred gathering of people, especially with the Buddhist priests that attended and sort of helped with a ceremony with the cranes, the paper cranes that were placed on the ground right opposite the gates of energy. And it was such a moving experience seeing people like Connie Hogarth, who for 40 years has battled this. Her determination at 85 years of age was just so inspiring. The representative, the Japanese man who came from Fukushima, who was a contract laborer and union organizer, who was there at the nuclear power plant helping his fellow people. The translation, and we don't understand Japanese, most of us, but you could see the passion and the spiritual hope that he had in his heart that if we do this, we are going to help not only him, the rest of the world, but each one of us, so that we are connected on a spiritual basis and a community level.
Well, it was a great, great event, and you know, what we're hoping now is to really figure out how to get Indian Point physically shut, and that's, you know, we've been to rallies and petitions and political action and the whole deal, and what we need to do now is actually get these plants down. Patricia, thank you so much. Stay on the line if you like. We're happy to have you with us. We're joined actually now by Deb Katz, calling us from Massachusetts. Deb has been one of the great leaders of the grassroots movement to shut Vermont Yankee, and I'm of the belief that if we can get Vermont Yankee shut, I think we've got a real shot at doing it, that Indian Point will follow soon thereafter. Deb, you're with us?
I am with you, Harvey.
Okay, and I'm with you, dear. we're together in this. So can you give us an on the ground firsthand update? We've got IPSEC and Riverkeeper and Patricia from Long Island, all of us on pins and needles to hear what exactly is going on in Vermont, how imminent the shutdown might be, and what this implication will be for Indian Point. So can you fill us in?
Well,
you're with Citizen Awareness Network.
Turned, and it's really complicated. So people may know that the Entergy took the state of Vermont to court because the legislature had passed what was called Act 160, which empowered the Vermont legislature to decide whether Vermont Yankee could continue to operate once its Vermont license expired, which is called the Certificate of Public Good, in March 21st, 2012. In 2010, the legislature voted to not give Entergy the ability to get that Certificate of Public Good. And in 2011, Entergy took the state to court. And it was heard in federal court before Judge Murtha on the issue of preemption. And although the state lost the case and the judge decided it was in the hearts and minds of legislators to really use Act 160 to deal with safety, he remanded the issue of the Certificate of Public Good back to the Public Service Board.
So what he said, the federal judge said not that Indian Point has, that Vermont Yankee has to continue to operate, but
no,
merely that the legislature couldn't vote. The vote in the legislature,
right,
as I recall, was 26-4,
yes,
to shut it down. And, of course, we have the governor now who wants it shut down.
That's right. And, in fact, the state appealed the judge's decision and is now headed for the Second Circuit in New York to overturn Murtha's decision. Murtha, however, and asked Entergy during the trial.
Well, wait. Deb, let's clarify. The state is asking Murtha, that part of the Murtha's decision that said the state could not shut Vermont Yankee, they are, the legislature couldn't. They're appealing that.
Yes.
But you're about to tell us the second part of the decision.
That's right, which is that Entergy, during the hearing for the case, was asked by Murtha what they wanted. And they said they wanted to go back to the Public Service Board.
That was a mistake.
Well, yes. But they didn't recognize it at the time. They thought that meant they had that it was a cakewalk and that they were going to get a rubber stamp. So...
It's all right. We're with Deb Katz here. Deb, who's coughing in Vermont there or in Massachusetts, is giving us a rundown on what's happening in Vermont. It's directly relevant to Indian Point because Indian Point, we have a governor who wants to shut that reactor as well. The question is how it's going to happen. So Deb is telling us now about the federal case. And what's happening now is, Deb, if you'll clarify the...
Yes.
Go ahead.
Sorry. I have a bad cold.
Well, I'm sure it'll improve once Vermont Yankee is shut.
Entergy went back to the Public Service Board and asked them for a decision. And about 3 weeks ago, the Public Service Board actually sent out a series of questions, both to the petitioner, which is Entergy in this, and the interveners. And the questions that the board asked really freaked Entergy out.
So Entergy now has gone, and they are asking, and correct me if I'm wrong, Deb, they are asking the federal judge to change his decision, which Entergy initially viewed as a victory, and to not allow the Public Service Board to deny Entergy the right to continue to operate Vermont Yankee or to create radioactive waste. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
It is because of the questions that the board asked Entergy, which included the fact that Entergy did not have an injunction in terms of the Public Service Board and the issue of the CPG.
That certificate of public good. So
yes.
If the Public Service Board denies Entergy the certificate of public good, then the plant should shut on March 22nd. Is that correct?
Well, it's more complicated than that. And there was a hearing last Friday in which it became clear that Entergy has yet to ask the board for a stay so it can either complete the hearing it's in or begin a new hearing.
Okay.
The judges were really furious with Entergy in terms of the stance they've taken and, in fact, raised the issue about whether Entergy was going to go back to court if they didn't get the decision that they wanted.
Well, Deb Katz, in Massachusetts with the Citizens Awareness Network, if the Public Service Board of Vermont denies Entergy their permit to continue to operate, the certificate of public good, and the permit to continue to generate radioactive waste, shouldn't Vermont Yankee immediately shut?
That could happen, but the potential is that the board would issue a stay so Entergy could go through a hearing process.
Why? Why would they do that? Why not just shut them down?
Because it's what they usually do. It is not unheard of. What is, in some ways, I think, unheard of is that Entergy hasn't asked for it yet.
And maybe they're afraid to.
Well, they are afraid to. One of the things that came up at that hearing was one of the intervener's lawyers raised the fact that in terms of the memorandum of understanding, the contract that Entergy signed when it bought the reactor, the only kind of CPG it can get, if it doesn't have one in place by March 21st, is a CPG to clean the site up.
Huh, we like that. That's good.
Yes, we do like that.
So, Philip Musigas and Susan Shapiro here at Indian Point.
Yeah.
What do you see as the implications from what Deb has told us here about what's happening in Vermont with Vermont Yankee for shutting down Indian Point in New York?
Well, I think the cases are different. I mean, we don't have the same kind of state law. The State Public Service Commission in New York, you know, does not have the same clear path to denying Entergy's operations. So we have a different path here. I think the key, as we've talked about before, is for the state of New York to uphold this water quality certification denial. And as long as they do that, and, you know, in the worst case, even if they force Entergy to build cooling towers, we're confident that the company does not want to spend that money to do that. And so...
Well, wait. Now let's talk about that for a minute. The state has the power with the permit, the water quality permit, to force Indian Point owners and Entergy, the company, to build a cooling tower?
Well, essentially they do, yeah. It's a little bit circuitous.
It's post-cycle cooling. It's not really a power.
If I can finish?
Yes, please.
Yeah. So it's essentially the state denied the water quality certification requirement under the Clean Water Act because Entergy had applied for it saying, you know, we're going to continue to operate with the cooling system we have that uses 2 billion gallons of water a day and is destroying the Hudson River ecosystem, but we think it's fine and we should be allowed to operate with that. And the state denied that permit saying, you know, you're violating multiple water quality standards in the state and you're killing fish and you're damaging the environment, and so we're not going to let you continue to operate business as usual. Now, technically, Entergy could come back and essentially reapply for the same permit and offer to build cooling towers. But I can tell you that is not likely to happen. It's very, very unlikely. Cooling towers cost, because of the cost, it will cost anywhere from $500 million to $1 billion. And even though the company can, they can make that investment on paper, they make enough profit to be able to do that. Every indication I've seen is they have no interest in doing that. They would rather keep this in court and keep litigating this and spending money on lawyers, you know, for years if they can tie it up in court, because that's still cheaper than doing any upgrades that would protect the environment. So I think what you're going to see is, you know, Entergy is, the state is most likely going to get through this hearing on this water permit. You know, we're pretty confident that they're going to keep the permit denied. And that will force Entergy to force their hand. And as long as that permit is denied, Entergy can't get a license renewal from the NRC. And I think...
So then if they don't get the renewal, then one reactor shuts in 2013 and the other in 2015.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Now, the biggest hurdle we have is Entergy has spent billions of dollars in campaigns, in public, in false advertisement, basically, in push-pull polls, telling everyone that these cooling towers are going to be 14 stories high, and they're hideous, and they're a terrible thing, and our system works better. The reality is they're not. That's not actually the system that has to be put into place. They also spend, they sponsor the Yankee games. So if you listen to a Yankee game or go there, you're constantly being bombarded by how carbon-free and inexpensive nuclear at Indian Point is. And what our biggest hurdle is to educate the public that those aren't true statements and that it is not carbon-free. It's the most expensive type of energy, and that, in fact, we, the public, are the insurers for it, which goes to, you know, the bigger issue of the Price-Anderson Act. And also the health issues.
All right, now, the Price-Anderson Act is the law that was passed in 1957 by the Congress exempting or protecting owners of nuclear plants from the full liability from a major disaster. The limit now, I think, is around $12 billion, and then the rest of it is picked up by the taxpayer or the ratepayer. So God forbid this would be an accident at Indian Point and do a few trillion dollars worth of damage. Entergy is only liable for about $12.5 billion, and then they can declare bankruptcy anyway, so what difference does it make? It's all on the public. Gary Shaw, who's on the line briefly. Gary, was it you who informed us the resolution against Indian Point is at ipsecinfo.org, ipsecinfo.org, is that correct? Gary Shaw, are you still there?
Okay. That's the right address.
He must have jumped off. Now, is this correct, the resolution that you are circulating to go to the governor and to encourage the state to...
Harvey?
Yes.
It's Gary.
Oh, Gary, okay. The resolution IPSECINFO.org, IPSECINFO.org.
That's
available for people to sign and to send in to the governor.
It's right on the front page, and it talks about for public safety and what they should do with it once they take it to their local organizations is mail it to IPSEC, I-P-S-E-C, that stands for the Indian Point Safe Energy Coalition, at P.O. Box 131, Ossining, New York. Ossining is spelled O-S-S-I-N-I-N-G, and the zip code is 10562. And what that resolution asks for are real-life safety measures, like having building hard containment around the spent fuel buildings, since those buildings are nothing more than commercial construction, and we know that the highest concentration of radioactivity is in the spent fuel pools. It's not in the reactors. It asks for expansion of the evacuation zone from 10 miles to 50 miles, since the United States government in the NRC told every American in Japan when Fukushima happened to flee at least 50 miles. It includes a couple of other issues that are all common sense moves to make Indian Point safer until we can get the place closed down. And on that home page of IPSECINFO.org, there's also on the left side of the screen a link to the 2011 petition that's been signed, that's been circulated. So if people want to sign something themselves and submit it, they can download that off of the website as well, and it has that Ossining post office box address right on the petition.
Now, are these petitions actually having an impact? Philip and Susan Shapiro, Philip Musigas of Riverkeeper, Susan Shapiro of IPSEC, Gary Shaw of IPSEC, is this really going to have an impact?
Well, the governor needs political coverage, and any elected official needs political coverage to have this happen. And it's having the impact of showing how many people in the region are really believe this should be shut. The other thing that we need to, do is get sustainable energy online to make this happen, because one of their big arguments is that it's that we don't have replacement energy. But just so everyone knows, it takes 10 years to close down one of these things. So once that even that when they're their license expires, there's a long period of transition. So there is plenty of time to get that online. And I think they have a major impact, the petitions.
Yes. And Phil, if I can jump in for one second.
This is Philip Musigas from Riverkeeper.
Yes, thanks. Riverkeeper and Natural Resources Defense Council actually commissioned an energy replacement study to look at what it would take to replace Indian Point, and it's up on our website. Riverkeeper.org, and you probably wouldn't be surprised to hear that the study shows we have a wide range of alternatives to replacing the plant's power, and we can do it in time and we can do it affordably. So I encourage people to go to our website and look at that study. And the amazing thing even to us about that was, the energy expert we hired found that you could get most of the savings to replace Indian Point from energy efficiency and renewables alone.
Deb Katz with Vermont Yankee, are there similar studies showing how Vermont can get its power without Vermont Yankee nuclear plant?
Vermont Yankee's power has already been replaced. The state of Vermont, as of March 22nd, 2012, will get no power from Vermont Yankee. It's over. We have replaced it. We're not happy with all of the way it was replaced. It was replaced with Hydro-Quebec and some power from Seabrook, but the work is now going to be to replace the contract with Seabrook. But it's a long-term contract, okay. And it was way below what Vermont Yankee was offering. So Vermont Yankee is off the table already. And, in fact, what Entergy wanted was not to sell power to the state. It wanted to be on the open market, selling power at the highest rate that it could.
Patricia on Long Island. Oh, yeah, go ahead. Sorry, Deb.
What I want to say. I just want to say that the traction that New York and Vermont are both pursuing are the issues of states' rights. And the issues that are very important for each state to look at is where does the state have traction in terms of having the power to make choices that will force these reactors to shut down, because the Nuclear Regulatory Commission will never do it.
And Harvey, this is Gary. And just to support or underscore what Philip just said, the new two committees from the New York State Assembly held hearings in New York in January. They listened to the New York Independent System Operators. They listened to Con Ed. They listened to the Charles River Associates, who did a report that Mayor Bloomberg is touting that said there would be problems. And they also listened to the Synapse report that was sponsored by Riverkeeper and NRDC, and their conclusions after listening to all the evidence is that Indian Point can be replaced with minimal impact on ratepayers and no reliability decline.
So, in other words, like Japan, where 52 of 54 reactors are shut, Indian Point is expendable to the energy needs of New York, and Vermont Yankee has already been replaced in Vermont. Patricia on Long Island, is there anything else you want to add? We're kind of winding down here.
Yes, I would definitely say that it is up to all of us for a grassroots effort to make this swell into the community that we all believe that we can. We can be empowered by the progression of things, the progress things have occurred now, and go out and get a petition signed, get your libraries, get your churches, get your local people to support one another and get this momentum going, because it has really started a fire and a swell of positive effects.
Well, my feeling about Vermont Yankee is that if we can get that shut, it will be a major step forward in states' rights, they apply to nuclear power plants, and it should be a big boost to the movement to shut Indian Point. What do you think about that, Susan Shapiro from IPSA?
I absolutely agree, and I think going back to, we are the insurers, the public is the insurers, we need to change this dialogue. The dialogue is we're the insurers, we are requiring safety, not only for our health, but for our fiscal sanity and security. And the reality is we did a property value study around Indian Point, and the 50-mile region, the property values are $8.5 trillion. So if a Fukushima happened here, it's only insured at the tune of 0.13%. I don't think as insurers, we the public, should be insuring this plant at such a high risk to ourselves. And we have to change the dialogue. The NRC, we should be saying that the NRC needs to have stakeholders on the commission. It cannot only be nuclear operators.
Hacks, right. Okay.
We're the insurers.
Philip Musigasa, a last word real quick. We're running out of time.
Sure. I'm confident we're going to close this plant down. I think, and I think if Vermont Yankee closes and the state's rights are upheld, that puts more pressure on Entergy. Entergy owns both Vermont Yankee and Indian Point. And this is a company that they do bad business. I mean, they into the ground and for profits, and they don't care about local communities. So
you're right about that. Gary Shaw, real quick. Thank you, Philip.
Dangerous and unnecessary, not safe, secure, and vital.
All right. I think that covers everybody. Deb Katz, last word from you in Vermont.
Well, it was citizen power that got Act 160 passed, and it was thousands of people contacting their legislators that, in fact, got the state to say no to Vermont Yankee. And that work with all of those soldiers on the ground will continue until it's closed.
Well, with that last word, we hope we're writing an epitaph here for the nuclear power industry in general. I will have a piece out very quickly at nukefree.org on the grassroots shutdown of the worldwide nuclear power industry, especially in Europe, the United States, and Japan. We have been with the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. This is Harvey Wasserman. Of some great, great guests, a rapid-fire discussion of Indian Point, Vermont Yankee, and the shutdown, imminent shutdown of the nuclear power industry. We'll leave it to the great Pete Seeger. Had lunch with him yesterday. What a magnificent human being. Connie Hogarth, thank you for all that. And we will continue with this dialogue next week at the Solartopia Green Power Wellness Show. I'm Harvey Wasserman. Check our website, check nukefree.org, and we will see you in a nuclear-free Solartopia.
So we had to work to pay the cost, and so we went in.